Hi, I'm Shanna Bennett, and you're listening to Matter of Life and Death. We are deep into experimentation on this episode, so you'll definitely have to let us know what you think. There are going to be four segments on this show. We're going to chat about things happening in the news, and you'll definitely hear our opinions on it. And we're going to spotlight how you can use theater activism. That's right. Theater activism to shift the conversation and make real change. And we'll share calendar-worthy events coming up, and we're going to close out with things that bring us joy. So stay tuned and enjoy the show. And now, our In the News segment. We felt like it was necessary to talk about things that people should know about because there's a lot going on in the news regarding student loans and student loan debt, and we're all busy. You know, we got jobs, we got kids, we got mortgages, and so it's kind of a challenge to keep it all straight. And so we figured we would present you with a segment where we review some of the happenings and current events regarding student debt. And so we can dive right into this appeal that was made on the Sweet versus Cardona case. Quick recap. Remember, there's borrower defense repayment is a program that borrowers are supposed to have access to as a means of acknowledging that their schools have defrauded them in some way, have misled them in some way. But during the Trump administration, very little applications were processed, very few applications were approved. And we see where the Biden administration is trying to make up for lost time regarding that. But in the meantime, a group of borrowers that went to for-profit schools have essentially sued the Department of Education, and they're saying, hey, this is a problem. Like, we've applied. It's been years. We haven't heard anything. And so a judgment was made. I think it was mid-November. And then there was a period of time where an appeal could have been made. There was an appeal. And I think the appeal was made sometime in January.
Yeah. It was the worst. And it basically, yeah, was allowing people who had applied for borrower's defense that were in this group before June 22nd of 2020. To have those debts from the predatory schools cancel student debt. We actually had Teresa Sweet and Alicia Davis on for episode 58, Sweet versus Cardona Victory. And it's just, yeah, I don't know how you all feel, but I'm like, we saw it coming, but it's just so devastating.
Supposed to be like a monumental case in terms of the debt. So I believe that they've moved past the appeal. And I think it was after February 15th. Now Judge Alsup, I always mispronounce his name. I think it's Alsup. I think he'll be ruling soon. So I'm pretty sure all the folks that are tied to that case are just waiting like pins and needles, because I believe they're just waiting for a judgment at this point. I hope that it goes in our favor. I think that it's good for these for-profit schools to acknowledge that they can't continue to take advantage of borrowers. And I think in terms of the Department of Education, it's good that they're acknowledging that this program has essentially failed. And so hopefully, you know, good changes will come from it. But yes, it's really aggravating, the whole situation. It's just a mess of a program, and it looks like they're really trying to move forward.
Yeah, and we'll link to the show notes so you can get the most up-to-date information on what's happening in the Sweet versus Cardona as it's evolving. But yeah, February 15th is, I think, when they had the closing stuff. And now we're just sort of waiting. How do you feel, Talia? You're hanging out here with us. Is there anything you have to say about this?
It's the same song we're hearing over and over again. We get to a point, the student debtors get to a point where the case is in our favor, everything ends in our favor, and then somebody comes in and sweeps a counter argument, and then there's a damn stay that doesn't allow us to move forward.
It feels like by design to keep us like not hopeful, but we got to stay hopeful. We got to keep fighting. Yeah. There is a better world out there that we can be a part of, and we can't let the bastards get us down.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm just curious to really just see what happens after, you know. I mean, this would be a good time too to segue into the 28th, where the Supreme Court will hear the case on Biden's first, you know, the cancellation of 10K, 20K. What's going to happen with that?
Yeah. And I think when we had them on the show, Teresa Sweet and Alicia Davis, and one of the things that was really inspiring was listening to them talk about how long they've actually been fighting for this, because it's been years. And for, you know, the greater scope of us, it feels like we've been at this for a minute. And so it's inspiring to hear that even though it's taken so long, they're getting closer to justice. And, you know, here we are with this February 28th date, with these two cases up for the Supreme Court to review. And that'll be really interesting also, because we're sitting against this kind of conservative court, and it'll be interesting to see what they do. I don't know. Again, shout out to the Debt Collective, who is hosting, amongst other organizations, a protest outside of the courthouse on February 20th.
Later in the episode, we're going to bring on people to talk a little bit about that. And
yeah,
we're also going to be talking about stuff that's happening on March 1st. If you can't join on the 28th, like, you can join this theater. I'll let Talia talk about it a little bit, even though we're going to have a whole segment on how exciting it is. But yeah, on February 28th, there's the SCOTUS stuff, which there's going to be a rally. We'll talk more about it in the episode, but Talia is also doing.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that we will be at spotlighting in the spotlight segment of this episode. We'll talk a little bit about the February 28th and March 1st days of action that are leading up to that. But going back to the SCOTUS hearing that we're waiting anxiously for, and the resolution of that, you know, I mean, honestly, there's a little piece of me, of course, that just feels that because the court is so right-leaning that we're not necessarily going to get the answer that we want. But the good thing is that there are other ways to go about the cancellation. You know, the Biden administration used the HEROES Act, but we know that there are other tools that we can use to really achieve full cancellation, which is really what we're seeking, not just 10K, 20K, but one step at a time, right? So after, we just need to close this cycle out and sue them again. We will keep going at it until we get what we want, which is full cancellation for all of a very unjust debt.
I think something else too that could have been missed in the news, it wasn't last week, I think it was the week before, the Biden administration launched a brand new website for borrower defense repayment. And I only bring that up because we're talking about the Sweet versus Cardona case. And, you know, one of the things that Teresa mentioned was how complicated back in the day that application was. And so now there is a brand new website devoted to that with, quote unquote, more simple instructions. And so that is out there. If it's something that you're considering, if you're feeling like you didn't really get what you paid for with your college experience, and again, if you were misled or defrauded in some way, check it out, because it is a way, you know, to access debt cancellation, and it is an outlet that's there and available to us. So check that out.
There was also some terrible news that happened, actually, it just like came out this week, that Republican senators are filing a bill to force payments to start again. The bill, it's called Stop Reckless Student Loan Action Act. And the bill is like put up to end the student loan pause, even though it would allow the president to temporarily suspend payments for low income and middle income borrowers. But they're basically trying to force payments to start, which is just, from everything that I've heard and from all the people we've talked to, when they turn it on, it is going to be, they're not turning it on, because it is going to be a fiery mess of hell. Basically, they have lost people too. And in order to actually start collecting from people, they have to notify people, but they don't even know where a significant portion of people are. They just don't have their addresses. They don't have any of their information. It seems, and we'll probably bring people on to talk about this if this threat becomes actually real, but that in the news, that's it's just so ridiculous.
Yeah. And, you know, going to this Republican bill that was introduced, I mean, clearly it's so that the president cannot do this type of pausing or loan forgiveness that is tied to a national emergency. Again, tied to the HEROES Act. And again, we have the Higher Education Act that can be used, that does not need a national emergency in order to be enacted. So yeah, I feel like this is just a cycle that needs to close out before we begin a new one. And, you know, something that you mentioned, Nikki, which is really important, I think, too, to highlight is the awareness of people right now and all the activists that have been activated, let's say, during this time of pause, because yeah. One thing that has really, really been highlighted is the reality that our payments are not needed. You know, it does not need us to just be sheep and follow what they tell us to do. Mm-hmm. And so I really feel that the turning on the pause is going to bring a lot of people to a point where they're just thinking, where I feel that there's going to be insult to injury. Is that the saying, you know? It's kind of like, mm-hmm. It's insulting to think that after everything that the pause has shown, after all of the attention, national and international attention, that this situation has brought to forward, you know, has brought to the top, let's say, that you would all think that we will just continue things as usual and sign our lives away like always. And that's not going to happen. It's not. And also, you know, we're very close to an election year. You know, that's not going to look good for also the Democrats. And yeah, I just feel like it's not going to happen.
So yeah.
There's going to be an extension. And quite frankly, if there isn't an extension, yeah, I do think that shit's going to hit the fan and it's going to get really ugly.
It's going to get really nasty. Yeah, we brought on episode 34, John Oberg came on, and he actually is a whistleblower. And he's been in the room when they have used 20 U.S. Code 1082 to actually cancel student debt. He's seen it happen before. He worked for the Department of Education. He was a whistleblower saying that there was like a bunch of crap happening with the servicers, and sued a bunch of the servicers to like do it. So like the way, yeah. So the legal way that Biden is approaching this is like, at least in my non-legal opinion, like just one path that he can go down, but it doesn't even seem like the most like substantial, has the best legs path. So yeah, there's definitely more ways we can approach how ridiculous this whole thing is, honestly.
Just to repeat the name of this, it's the Stop Reckless Student Loan Actions Act. Like if you've already lost us at the name, like you've already lost us at the name. What about the reckless? It's funny because I just did a video on this and I said it should be called Stop Universities from Hiking Up Prices Beyond What Anyone Could Afford Act. Like that should have been the act if you really want to have something to stand on. But instead, we want to force people that can't afford it further into debt instead of standing up for them. We want to stand up. It just doesn't make any sense. And also, it's more political theatrics because these Republicans are up against a democratically controlled Senate. So this probably won't even get any votes. It probably won't even go anywhere. It's just to have some headlines in the news at this point, you know? So
yeah, and I wanted to just also really quickly highlight something that the Debt Collective posted, you know, as far as all of the people that the data collected from the people that applied for the relief, the 10K, 20K relief, which just came out from Politico. Most people, and this is in the Debt Collective's Instagram page that you can look at. You know, they say for years, Bad Faith Pundit said student debt cancellation would help rich white people who were super wealthy. Well, guess what? They lied. Here's the data. And so some of the things that they're showing is that less than 1% of applications came from the wealthiest zip codes. Most of the applications came from places where the per capita income is under 35K. 30 non-white neighborhoods accounted for more student debt applications per capita than majority white zip codes. And then you have some numbers. More than 98% of applications came from zip codes where the average income is under 75K. About 2/3 were from neighborhoods with an average income below $40K. Student debtors living in lower income areas applied for relief at a far higher rate compared to those living in wealthier neighborhoods. So this is to say, whatever help that, you know, that people had applied for, they are people that are not, number one, being reckless, and number two, wealthy.
Right. Right.
So that's really important to highlight as a point.
Yeah. And we're going to link to the Debt Collective's Instagram. All of these stories that we're talking about, we will have links in our show notes, which you can find like below the podcast or on our website, matteroflifeanddebt.com. This is episode 62, this episode. Is there anything top of mind for you all before we like transition into our spotlight segment?
I think the only thing is there are a couple articles I've seen where it talks about the administration being pressured into developing this Plan B. And there have been a couple quotes coming from the White House basically saying that no, like they don't have a backup plan. They're incredibly confident with their legal standing and they're not, you know, creating some alternate strategy. Like this is it. And I kind of appreciate them doubling down like that and not bending to pressure. So like have another plan. But at the very same time, we do see where they're tweaking various repayment plans and different programs to make allowance for more debt forgiveness, for more $0 monthly payments. And, you know, that seems to be their Plan B. So I think that's interesting.
And I hate it. I don't like their Plan B. I think their Plan B is garbage. Yeah. I think they need to have an actual Plan B that isn't just more bureaucracy and more let's kick the can down the road, as Astra said.
The only Plan B we're freaking looking for is full cancellation, period. We're not being forgiven for anything. Just cancel the damn thing. Yeah. And, you know, stop the courts from taking over this way.
It's really ridiculous. Like, just want to make it more bureaucratic, more hard for people. Yeah. And I don't know. I just like, I'm lost for words. I just
couldn't. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Same here.
And I think lately what's bugging me too is like this emphasis on the COVID-19 pandemic, which I know is linked to the Heroes Act, which is why they're using it. But like, don't blame the pandemic. Like, how about we blame the system that got us here in the first place? Because it sucked before the pandemic. The pandemic has nothing to do with it. We already were like this before. I mean, if we need a scapegoat, fine. But let's not get carried away.
I mean, think about it. This the whole idea, I think, of student debt and the possibility that it could blow up in somebody's face was very real from very early on, hence the creation of the Higher Ed Act. The fact that exists
right
already shows that they did it because there's a possibility where it can get overwhelming to the system.
Right.
Yeah.
And it clearly has.
Yeah, we've gotten to a place where we've made a huge mess. There's no other way to speak about it than it being a huge mess, an upward mobility tax, a unneeded burden on people who are just seeking education. Is there anything else before we move on to the spotlight segment?
I don't think so.
I'm so excited about this spotlight segment. Shannon and I are going to sign off and we're going to let Talia, since Talia is so involved with this project, take over the conversation. But Shannon and I will be back. You and I will be back to share some events and to talk about what's bringing us joy.
Well, hello, everyone. This is a really exciting little segment that we're starting on Matter of Life and Debt. This is a spotlight segment where we are dedicating the platform to highlighting really cool, interesting projects that are starting. And I am delighted to have you all as our first project to spotlight. Y'all, this is a really, really cool theater troupe. We are called We, the Liberated People of the Debt Collective Theater Activism Troupe. And with me, I have Elisha Bacon, Dr. Shamel Bell, and Todd Schittieri. Welcome to the segment, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to take it to Dr. Shamel Bell and tell us a little bit about why theater activism and how that arrived for us in the Decalogue.
Yes, I'm Dr. Shamel Bell. I have the title of Visionary Escalator of the Debt Collective. So I came on last year to elevate social justice movements through art. And so I brought in, you know, dance. So we did Crump, and then now we're doing theater. And I also have several healing modalities that I like to bring into the Debt Collective. For me, I was trained in Theater of the Oppressed alongside my son. At the time, he was 8 years old. And we were trained by Augusta Boal's son and the Center Theater of the Oppressed. And so amazing Barbara Santos and Gio, they were incredible in, you know, giving us the foundation. But something that's really cool about me, I got a PhD from UCLA in culture and performance. And a part of my dissertation is talking about Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed and then Bell Hooks's Engaged Pedagogy. And then I kind of also did my work in street dance activism because I was a like founder, or like they like to call it founder, I don't like that. Original member is what I call it, of Black Lives Matter Los Angeles. And I started to do something called street dance activism, where we would dance at protests as a spatial intervention, but mostly, you know, healing modalities, you know, lifting frequencies and vibrations. And in my dissertation, I started to call it choreographies of the liberated. So I would move in my theory, building off of Boal, to choreographies of the oppressed going towards a process of transformation to choreographies of the liberated. And so that's what's interesting about bringing this work with you all to the Debt Collective as a form of theater activism, because I have in the past used legislative theater at UCLA and different places to make interventions and legislation at UCLA that actually did come to pass, and solutions with vice chancellors because of racist incidents that were happening at UCLA Family Housing. So now I'm really, really interested to make interventions with, you know, student loan debt cancellation. So that was a long way of going about that.
No, absolutely. Thank you for that. Thank you, Shamel. You bring in a lot. You bring in an incredible wealth of knowledge. Elisha, I wanted to ask you now, what are the amazing gifts that you bring to the theater activism troupe? What called you in?
I also studied theater in college. I got a minor in theater as my bachelor's degree, and I studied philosophy as my major. And then I got a master's in Africana studies. And in addition to that, I've always been doing theater, even as a child. But my specialty was kind of movement and acting without necessarily relying on words. So I found to be very powerful and very transformative for me personally, working through some of my fears. I got involved in activism because of voting right issues and just like your son around our democracy. And that led to me working in climate justice. I'm a full-time organizer for Mothers Out Front in upstate New York. We focus on community involved and engaged in the political process and advocating for our rights. And I find that there's a connection between these things and the work I did in philosophy and Africana studies, because there are a lot of great philosophies that come from the African continent, like Ubuntu, that is all about our collective wellness in addition to our individual wellness. And so I got connected to the Debt Collective just because I have student loan debt and I believe in the mission. And I joined a story time where we were working on how to write our personal stories, and we talked about doing a mock trial, which I found to be just so exciting because I wrote a song, a punk song that was about, you know, the people holding our elected accountable and having, you know, basically a mock trial and getting justice in our own way, even if it was more in the imaginative specter. But I did that sort of theater training with Theater of the Oppressed of New York City, and then have continued my own education in Boal's work through reading and working with other actors in my area. And I'm also going to be speaking at this pedagogy conference in Indiana, where Jody Wall is MSU, so I'm really excited about that. And so in Albany, we've been working on Theater of the Liberated, is what we called our troupe that we're forming out here. But I, you know, connected with the amazing group of organizers of the Deck Collective, and it just seemed like a good time to, you know, infuse the work that we're doing with theater and activism. And so part of this activism troupe forming, and very excited to see what we can get, what kind of success we'll achieve with it. I think when it comes to theater and activism and art and activism, you know, for me, it infuses joy into something that is already empowering, but also kind of painful, because we're working towards, we're advocating for ourselves because we have a need that's not being met. And the way our politics and our government is now, it can be very depressing. It can feel hopeless, which is what, you know, they want us to feel, because if you feel hopeless, then you are depressed, you're less likely to fight the system. But when we bring in activism and combine it with art and theater, for me, that infuses joy, which, and it helps us form community, which a really amazing woman once told me is the antidote, maybe it's the antidote to despair. And so I think regardless of whether or not we are able to achieve our ask in the next, for the foreseeable future, I know that we are going to have success with the initiative that we're doing, because we're going to build community, we're going to move the needle, and we are going to achieve what we set out to do eventually.
Mic drop. Come on.
Hear, hear. Ashe. Elisha is also an amazing wealth of knowledge. Her activism is on fire. I got to talk, to hear her speak yesterday at Mothers Out Front, and I was very, very impressed with your work, Elijah. So moving on to Todd. Todd is always so bubbly and vibrant. Tell us what brought you to be part of this theater activist group.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. And I think really Dr. Bell and Elijah really just said it really well. And I'm sort of new to the activist space, but I've been with the Deck Collective for a while now, since graduating college and having my own debt burdens to bear. But, you know, I've been in this space with many amazing, just really sophisticated people who have inspired me to look at different sources of reading and just other belief systems that have gotten me into my own sort of journey on exploring different modes of theater, since that was my initial interest growing up, being in the drama club in high school and doing theater in college. I always used theater as building community and being a part of where I was, wherever I was. So it just seemed like a natural fit to inquire within the Deck Collective ways that I could use my interest to be of service to the community and the collective trauma that we're all facing in this time. So, you know, the creation of this troupe really came about, well, at least my joining it came about for me exploring who was in the Deck Collective that also had similar interests. And that also brought me to you, Talia, and having a conversation that one fateful day when we were discussing ways that we could use theater, and you turned me on to Augusto Boal's work, and that got me reading about all of the books that he wrote, from Games for Actors and Non-Actors, Theater of the Oppressed, Legislative Theater, and even Rainbow of Desire. I read all of those books, and it just got me more and more inspired. As I was reading these books, I was like, wow, we could really use this tool. We could really be using this in our era right now. And so that also got me exploring, you know, who's in the Deck Collective, who's in New York, where I'm originally from, who's in the States, who's doing this. And so that kind of helped guide the conversation forward with everybody. And then, you know, before I knew it, we were in Zoom meetings creating all these different events. And it's just been so amazing to be around so many creative, just individuals. I'm just so inspired every time I'm on these calls with people, and I'm very grateful to be in this space, in this, being with such amazing role models like everybody in this room and everybody who couldn't be here today. So that's a little bit of my background with the movement right now.
Thank you, Todd. And You know, I think I could segue a little bit just to say in situate very quickly, you know, Theater of the Oppressed, just because we've said that, but I didn't necessarily introduce it in the beginning. One of the types of theater activism that theories, if you will, or format that we use within theater activism is Theater of the Oppressed by Augusto Boal. It brings us a certain awareness, right, as to what is holding us back, what's oppressing us. It highlights our position in the system, and then it allows us a space to really activate our imagination so that we can collectively find ways to work through that, right? And arrive at healing, arrive at working together, collectivity, arrive at joy. And, you know, one thing that I, yesterday in a conversation with Todd and others, again, talking about this work that we're doing, we talked about how, you know, when there's an issue, it reminded us of ants, right? Like when there's an issue in the colony of ants, it's not one little ant that's going and tackling the issue. It's the whole entire, like hundreds and thousands of them, you know, yes. And they get the work done, right? And I think that that's a beautiful thing, not just about theater, but about art, that it can really show us the beauty around us so we can be inspired and we can really take inspiration from the way other systems around us work to really tackle that which is conflicting. So with that, I just want to say that this is an incredible project that we are all so fortunate to be a part of. We're so fortunate that we found each other. We're so fortunate that we're working together and weaving ourselves into the other, into this collective. You know, we talk about Theater of the Oppressed, but we're going to be using other types of theater activism from, playback theater to just different styles of theater, you know, in general. It doesn't just have to be Boal, agri-pop, you know, all of these things that are coming to up to the surface for us. Anything that's going to give us a space to really activate the imagination, because in there is the key to the revolution. You activate the imagination, you can get things done. So with that, I want to just, to whoever wants to answer, who would like to promote our day of action? We have February 28th and March 1st. Dr. Bell, can you let us know more about the work that the troupe will be engaging or offering February 28th and March 1st?
Beautiful. So several organizations such as the NAACP and the Debt Collective, we will be having a people's rally for student debt cancellation at the Supreme Court. And so that is February 28th, and we will be there at 8 a.m. We'll have a lot of speakers. It's your traditional rally. I will also be doing a Radical Joy intervention, which is my role as the visionary escalator. We bring in dance, we bring in, you know, meditation, and kind of, you know, transmute the shame and the guilt that, you know, student debt has, you know, thrust it on our backs, right? And so we kind of move our bodies through that. And then the very next day, we will be having our theater activism workshop. So we will be at Lafayette Square, I believe it's called, at the White House. And we will be there from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And basically, you can think of this as a way of collecting folks with collective power. And it's a free theater workshop. And so we will be, you know, using form theater, we will be using maybe legislative theater, and, you know, telling you a little bit about the differences. And most importantly, we will be using as a backdrop for, you know, promoting to gather more people in We the Liberated People of the Debt Collective Theater Activism Troupe, as well as possibly incorporating legislators into our next iteration. So inviting the AOCs and folks who, you know, Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, folks who say they are against student debt and are for the full cancellation of it. Let's actually do some theater that will have some solutions and bring it to legislators. So yeah, if you all would contact me at the Debt Collective, so Shamel at debtcollective.org, S-H-A-M-E-L-L at debtcollective.org, Shamel at debtcollective.org. and you can get involved. And there will also be a virtual option for folks on March 1st that will be led by the lovely Italia, Todd, and Amy, and other folks would be there.
Holly.
So you could, and Holly will be there with my Harvard University students. I am a lecturer in theater, dance, and media at Harvard, and my students will actually be engaging in theater activism with folks from We the Liberated People of the Debt Collective.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Thank you, Shamel. And also just want to plug in regarding March 1st and the virtual component of the protest, the theater activism. We highly encourage folks that have kids, that have babies, that think that because there's a little human crying in the background, you can't join. This is not true. We're all part of this collective struggle. You know, we are doing this together. So on the March 1st virtual component piece, there will be a breakout room that will be dedicated to parents with kids. And we will have some theater games, some activities to do with your child so that you don't feel like just because you have a younger kid that you need to tend to and you can't be on the ground, or, you know, just because you think that, oh, you know, there might be too much noise in the background. No, our children crying and being human is not noise. You can definitely bring that in and we can be inspired by that and use that in some great games.
Yes, I also wanted to mention that my now 12-year-old, who's also trained in Theater of the Oppressed, will be helping to Joker in person, and we will be online. So please check out the Debt Collective website and our Debt Collective Instagram to get more details and follow us. But yes, we will have my son, who is 12, being a joker. So yes, children are welcome. This is an intergenerational conversation in theater activism as political activity. So
thank you. Yes, and check back just for the times. I think they are solidified, but they're not, we don't have them just yet, but we'll make sure that once we have it, we'll post it on this episode in the show notes. Lovely people, is there anything else you would like to say before we head off to our next segment? Any final words?
I just want to reinforce that idea of joy as liberation and an act of rebellion and self-love too. So that's what we're going to be engaging in. But that's something that even if you can't make it, that you can do all day, every day.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. And with that spirit of joy, I want to thank you all for sharing this time with me in this very special segment, spotlighting We the Liberated People of the Debt Collective Theater Activism Troupe. It is an honor to work with you all and to share space as comrades, as friends. This is going to be awesome.
We're going to take over the world.
Yes, we are.
No, I just wanted to jump in and just say, like, I have such a great feeling about, like, what we're going to do in shifting. Like, I can feel the shift. So just thank you so much for being now an international theater activism troupe. This is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, we're doing big things. Yeah, watch out. Yes. Watch out for us. We're about to make some pretty big noise. Thank you all. And now, please join us for a really important segment on upcoming events in the month of March. These are events that are not just solely for the Debt Collective. There's so much going on, and we want you all to be aware of them so you can put them in your calendar.
So please join us for the Black Women Dream Space every fourth Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific and 2 p.m. Eastern. And so it's on Zoom. So go ahead and go to debtcollective.org and imagine what a life without debt feels like. And so we release guilt and shame and freedom dream. So Black Women Dream Space every fourth Sunday.
I have an event coming up on March 21st, and then we're going to be targeting a couple of days. This is going to be in Albany, New York, that people are going to be coming up from all over New York State. We're going to march, and we've done this before. We deliver a letter to these banks. Last time it was TD Bank, this time it's Chase, and it's going to be Wells Fargo, and I believe Citibank, and we are letting them know that we see them. We know that they're funding these fossil fuel projects that are polluting our communities, and it's unacceptable. And if they don't stop, then we're going to be divesting from their banks. And I'm really excited because I'm part of the Red Rebel Brigade, which is something I think was started by the Extinction Rebellion. There's different groups of Red Rebels all over the world, and we dress in some to represent humanity and our common shared commonalities. Our blood is the same, and so we make a presence there, and that's part of the event. So last time we move really slowly and we block the street as part of our activism. So we're going to be doing something like that again. And I'm really looking forward to it. So that's March 21st. My organization, Mothers Out Front, is a co-sponsor. It's being hosted by Rivers and Mountains Green Space Circle, Third Act, and Stop the Money Pipeline. And you can find more information out at Green Space Circle, Rivers and Mountains. If you Google that, it'll come up, but I can provide the link to Talia.
I don't have any specific event dates for this, but I do want to plug a new branch of the Debt Collective that is starting to form for disability rights. Debt impacts so many different types of people, you know, so many different identities. And for people in the disability movement, it has had a unique impact. So I do want to plug that development. And you could check the Debt Collective website for the online Zoom events that are taking place every month, where we discuss ways that we can work together to support each other in supporting disability rights in the Debt Collective movement.
Following up on upcoming events, the Debt Collective has this really interesting book club. It's called the Black Praxis Project Book Club. The book that they'll be covering is The Nation on No Map, Black Anarchism and Abolition. Pretty cool. It's going to be Sundays, March 5th through April 16th, and it'll be at 2 p.m. ET and 11 a.m. PT. Links for that will be on our website. So check that out if you're interested in joining the book club. Talia, is there anything else going on that you know about?
Absolutely, yes. And I love a good book, so make sure to go then. I have a good 2 events that are ongoing. A new member call for the Debt Collective, March 20th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you want to get to know the Debt Collective, join, get involved, Go ahead and join the new member call. We will have links to that as well on the episode show notes. And another very cool series, a Jubilee School series that will be starting March 28th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This one's a very cool one. I've attended a couple of these before and collaborated in them, and they're just a wealth of knowledge. This series is going to be Hidden Costs, Shedding a Light on the Impact of Carceral Debt on Women and Mothers. Very good information that's going to come out of that. So please go ahead and join that. Again, that is March 28th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll also have links to that on our show notes.
Thank you. I want to add that new member call is great if you want to meet people that are going through the same things that you're going through, whatever debt you have. I've met some really great people that way. I met Talia and some other really great members of the Debt Collective that way. So think about it if you want to join that new member call.
Shauna, what do you think we bring Nikki back? Because she's been here on the platform, not saying anything. If you all got to see me, she's our tech extraordinaire, and she has made it possible to not get any background noise. She's under a tent right now. And with that feeling of happiness and laughter that we feel right now, we definitely want to close off the show with a little bit of joy. What brings us joy today and this month and always? Nikki!
What is bringing me joy? There is a lot of things bringing me joy. I just accepted a job offer and will be the head of product design at a company starting in April. So I'm very excited. And the organization helps bring healthy food from local farmers to people who are low income, who are chronically sick and disabled, hoping to provide healthy meals to like assist with some of their conditions. So it seems like a really cool company and project, and I'm really excited to do that. So that's bringing me a little bit of joy right now.
That's awesome.
How about you, Shannon?
Oh my gosh. Okay, since you got us started with the work theme, I will say that work has been a challenge recently because I had a team and now it's just me, and I made an offer to someone recently to join me. So I'll be kind of rebuilding this team, and I really look forward to having more help, and I look forward to working with a new person with new energy and new personality. I'm just frankly, I'm looking forward to getting my life back a little bit, like going on a walk, having a workout, like having time to get groceries. So that's bringing me a lot of joy, and I'm holding a lot of positivity, and I hope that that goes well. Talia, what about you? What's bringing you joy right now?
So, you know, I'm going to go back to the books because, you know, I did mention how I love a good book, and I feel like this book is bringing me a lot of joy right now. As those of you that might have heard me in previous episodes, I always say that I'm a lover of utopias, and they're important to just reimagine the future that we want to be living. And right now I'm reading this really cool book called Love After the End, an anthology of two-spirit and indigiqueer speculative fiction edited by Joshua Whitehead. And it's absolutely delicious. It's so cool if you are into speculative fiction and just imagining just a beautiful new world for all. And that's bringing me joy today, y'all.
Lovely. That sounds so lovely. I'm excited. There's so many books. Oh, I gotta get reading.
Seriously.
Yeah. I have a friend, a dear friend. Shout out to Todd because he was actually in our spotlight segment. And we were talking about how books are just universes. And it's a beautiful gift to be able to share a book with somebody, whether it's like this or, you know, a hardcover or however it is. Sharing a book with somebody is really sharing a whole new world. So,
yeah. I love that you're just saying. Todd was awesome. After the spotlight, I hung out with him for a little bit. And I'm really excited what they're doing with disability and debt. That's really exciting.
That's also bringing me joy because I've been a big supporter of his and the move that the Debt Collective is doing with this. So that's also bringing me joy.
I have one more thing that's bringing me joy. And I know we were only going to do one thing, but like, it's so exciting. I'm like listening to you all talk about this theater project that you all are working on earlier in this episode. I don't know. It's just so awesome. And just like this persistent pushing forward for a better world for all of us, even in this moment that feels like such adversity, so many things that feel like not working. We just have to put one foot in front of the other and continue to maintain inspiration from each other. And I was really inspired by that conversation. So thank you.
Yeah. And isn't that a cool name that the collective came up with? I mean, we, the liberated people of the Debt Collective Theater Activism Troupe. It's long and it takes up all the necessary space and it's loud in the mouth. I mean, it's so theatrical and dramatic. I fucking love it. That brings me joy too. Y'all bring me joy.
Y'all bring me joy too. I'm so happy that I have gotten to meet all of you.
Yeah, likewise. Likewise. We're doing big things. I just wanted to say thank you so much for being in this process with us as we explore and experiment with the new style of podcasting, if that's a word. Remember that we'll be showing up once a month from now on at the end of the month, on the last Thursday of the month. And I hope that you all are willing to go on the ride with us, if you will. Make sure you call us.
Our number is 510-479-0323. Call us. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about something that makes you happy. Tell us about your experience with debt. And you'll be featured on the show. We're looking forward to connecting with you in this way and making the show more interactive.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. Love you all. Hey, and it's still February as we were recording this. Yeah, it comes out now February 23rd. So it's kind of like the love month. So spread the love.
Thanks for joining us on this episode.
See you next time. And scene.
If you like this episode of Matter of Life and Debt, subscribe and share it with a friend. It really helps people discover us. Matter of Life and Debt is hosted by me, Shanna Bennett, and created by Nikki Nolan. It is produced by Emma Klauber, Nikki Nolan, Talia Malay, and Shanna Bennett. It is edited by Nikki Nolan. Transcripts and social media writing is done by Emma Klauber. Our theme music was created by F.A. Ackman. Visit our website, matteroflifeanddebt.com, where you can listen to more episodes, access transcripts, and get additional context for the subjects you just heard about. Absolutely for free. The website again, matteroflifeanddebt.com. Thanks again for listening.